Wider Europe Briefing. How will the EU respond to Trump's defense demands? Welcome to Wider Europe, RFERL's newsletter focusing on the key issues concerning the European Union, NATO, and other institutions and their relationships with the Western Balkans and Europe's eastern neighborhoods. I'm RFERL Europe editor Rickard Joswiak, and this week I'm drilling down on two issues: boosting European defense spending and how the bloc is dealing with, or not dealing with, Georgia's controversial new precedent. Briefing number one, how can the EU boost its defence spending? What you need to know, one of the biggest talking points in Brussels this year is European defence and how to boost it. This discussion has gained momentum due to Russian advances in Ukraine and the pressure from a new US administration. US President Donald Trump has reiterated that 5% of gross domestic product, GDP, should be the new benchmark for defence spending, a target that no EU nation is currently meeting. It is therefore no surprise that Poland, which with 4.7% is the bloc's highest defence spender in terms of the share of its national budget, has adopted the official slogan "Security Europe" for its ongoing EU presidency. And defence will be the only topic on the agenda when the 27 EU leaders gather on February 3rd at Château de Limon, close to Brussels, for an informal summit. Deep background. Two guests are invited to that summit. Firstly, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer, who will meet all his EU counterparts together for the first time. That will pave the way for a proper EU-UK summit later in the year, where the potential for more concrete defence cooperation between London and Brussels can be hammered out. The second guest is NATO Secretary-General Mark Rutte, who has heeded Trump's 5% call. Rutte recently noted that European nations need to ramp up spending considerably and, if not, then start your Russian language courses or go to New Zealand. EU officials have also dialed up the rhetoric. The new EU foreign policy chief Kaja Kallas has talked up intelligence reports noting that Moscow could test the bloc's readiness to defend itself in 3 to 5 years, and noted that, in 2024, the 27 EU countries collectively spent an average of 1.9% of GDP on defence, while Russia spent 9%. As always on defence, the question is if Europeans can walk the walk and not just talk the talk. The informal summit will not have any formal conclusions or declarations. Instead, the ideas floating around will contribute by March to a much-touted European Commission white paper on how to boost EU defence. After that, leaders will meet again in June in Brussels for a proper summit to hopefully take some decisions. But that same month, the European Commission will publish its proposal for the next long-term EU budget, 2028 to 2034, that will set off all sorts of jockeying in EU capitals, given that the last long-term budget equaled nearly €2 trillion, $2.1 trillion. And it is here that EU defence spending may fall by the wayside. Drilling down, there are two other reasons why the EU is unable to move forward. One is the reading of what happened during the controversial parliamentary elections last year. The full OSCE/ODHIR report on the vote, which was released in December 2024, hasn't settled the issue. We cannot state that the election results were illegal or illegitimate. We still talk about irregularities. We haven't moved beyond that point, one EU official told me on background. The second issue is that the EU has a lot going on. When EU foreign ministers met in Brussels for their first Council of the Year on January 27th, they discussed Ukraine, the situation in the Middle East, and then how to deal with the new US administration. Georgia was relegated to the end of the meeting under current affairs. Little was decided when Georgia was discussed by ministers in December 2024. Sanctions on leading Georgian Dream officials, similar to those imposed by the United States, were shot down, and all that was green-lighted was a mostly symbolic measure of new visa requirements for Georgian diplomatic passport holders. At NATO, things are a bit simpler. One official, speaking anonymously because they were not authorised to speak on the record, told me that the short answer is yes, we see Kavalashvili as the Georgian president. The long answer is that it is a difficult situation, officially. We are not saying much, but if we must invite him to an event like a summit, we would. It is, however, worth pointing out that we don't foresee that Georgian ministers will be invited to NATO ministerials this year, nor any Georgian leaders to the NATO summit in The Hague in June. What is also underway in the military alliance is that some joint programs with Georgia might be suspended, notably cooperation with the country's defense ministry. This could come after a review, in which all NATO-Georgia cooperation will be scrutinized. The review should be presented to the 32 NATO member states in the coming weeks. Looking ahead, EU member states should finally get the European Commission proposal for the next sanctions package on Russia this week. The EU executive has worked on what would be the 16th round of measures against Russia since early January, and according to officials familiar with the topic, says the idea is to target Russian aluminium, agricultural products, liquefied natural gas and banks, as well as its shadow fleet, which defies embargoes to carry Russian crude oil and petroleum products. Brussels hopes to agree on the package around the third anniversary of the full-scale Russian invasion of Ukraine in late February. And that's all for this week. Feel free to reach out to me on any of these issues on Twitter or Sir Richard Joswiak, or on email at joswiakrerl.org. Until next time, Richard Joswiak. If you enjoyed this briefing and don't want to miss the next edition, subscribe here.